Today's Spurscast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/almighty. That's audibletrial.com/almighty. Over 180,000 titles to choose from. Access them right on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Fun to do bad things.
That's real, yo. I don't exaggerate at all, man. The more money you make, the more problems you get. And jealousy and envy is something that comes with the territory, man. A lot of people, it's just negative energy, like my man Puff said.
What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of? They speak English and what?
What?
English, mother, do you speak it?
Man, you been doing all this dope producing. You ain't had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
Welcome to the Spurscast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast.
Congratulations, you have arrived at episode 429 of the Spurscast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast, brought to you, of course, by ProjectSpurs.com. I'm your host today, this beautiful overcast afternoon here in Texas. I'm Ryan McCallum, casting the pods with me today, and I would venture to guess it is a sunny but also cold day out in Arizona. It's our favorite co-host, Jose Grijalva. Jose, how goes it, man?
Oh, it's gloomy outside, bro. It's cloudy. It's hot. There's no sun. It's typical Arizona, you know.
See, I always think of Arizona as just being really hot and dry.
Not like Beavis and Butthead to America. Yeah. You know when they say, "Oh, the sun sucks," kind of like that. That's how you picture Arizona. It's kind of like that during the summer.
Like what's the temperature out there right now?
Oh man, I can't even imagine.
You can't even imagine what the temperature is outside.
It's 67.
So why would you say you couldn't imagine? You could just go outside.
Because it's depressing. Oh, because it's depressing. It doesn't feel like 67.
You sound sick, man. Do you still have a cold?
I'm actually getting better, but yeah.
You sound better than you did the last time, for sure. But you still sound pretty rough. I'm here to tell you. Hey, so pre-show, we were talking, you know, a little bit NBA trade rumors. But just in the spirit of the guy who was, hate tweeting us, over wasting 15 minutes of the last show, let's spend some time and try to waste more than just 15 minutes. Let's go 16 to 20 minutes. Let's talk about the Schwan man. So you're saying you are now interested because you got a coupon in purchasing something from the Schwan guy. And I purchased something from Schwan's like 20 years ago. I frankly didn't even know it was still around.
Oh yeah, and they have it on their site. You know, I didn't know about it until I saw it on Facebook. It's like 50. It's 50% off. The code is 50 50 off. You know, makes sense, I guess. Original. Yeah, and I mean it's 50% off of everything. You know, I just ordered something simple because I've always thought it was cool. Like, oh, look, it's a Schwan's guy. Like in my neighborhood, if you see the Schwan's guy, stop at whoever's house. That house has bank. Everybody is looking at you, right. Judging you. You know, even if I live in the hood,
you start scouting that house for like what kind of TV do they have and do they have exactly. Iron bars on their windows and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like apparently they have to have a satellite and not cable, right? So, you know, I'm pretty excited. I just got some yogurt, some of that strawberry yogurt, and some of those strawberry fruit pops. Because I mean, I was gonna buy ice cream. I heard the ice cream's good from there. But then also at Fry's, because we don't have a Fry's here, but you know Walmart price matches, and that's how they monopolize this place here. Fry's has the dryer's ice cream for $1.88. Mm-hmm. Six is the limit, so of course I'm going to buy the six. So there's no point in buying ice cream from the Schwan's guy if I'm going to buy six dryer's ice cream buckets.
So I totally understand that because you're a guy that's all about value. I can just tell that about you. And so talk to me about Dollar Tree and the ribeye steak. These are all like future friends of the pod. Like these are going to be sponsors one day. I promise you. Schwann's and Dollar Tree or Dollar General.
Dollar Tree, where Dollar everything's Tree. A legit a dollar. It's legit, you know, sometimes dollar. even yeah, because I mean you go to Dollar all those other dollar places and they're like, you know, $1.50, you know, $1.70. Some things are even like $30. So no. Yeah, they have ribeye steak. You're just trying to make an enemy out of this guy, right? You just want to create a feud, lead it up to WrestleMania, and then that's the whole build up to that, right? That's where we're going with this.
There's no doubt about it. If you wanted to listen to a show about purely basketball, you could go listen to one of those other crappy podcasts that we've been listening to lately, just scouting out the competition. Nobody got it like the Spurs cast got it, right?
Yeah, that's those four virgins that we're hearing, right? Just kidding. We love everybody. You know, we want those guys on our show, of course, whoever they are, whoever we're talking about.
Well, let's talk a little bit of NBA news to start out the show. And then this show is very stat heavy. I want to throw some stats at you. We're a little bit further along than halfway, which is very surprising to me because the All-Star game, I always just think of that happening exactly at the midpoint of the season. So 41 games in, All-Star break. And this time, man, they're going to be like 50 games plus in some cases. Pretty nuts. Like the Rockets are already there. It's crazy. So All-Star game to me just seems like it's happening late this year. So we'll talk some stats. We'll do if playoffs started today and that kind of thing. But like I said,
I want to congratulate you on that because you're usually very nervous about bringing up stats unless we have Paul on the show. So this is a new you, right? I mean, somebody calls you out on Twitter. And now it's just like, you know, screw it. You're just going to be yourself now. This is you. It's no more gimmicks. This is Ryan we're hearing right now.
It's data science, bro. Data science. It's a new fad. It's the new me. And maybe the old me, too. But let's talk about the Knicks. And I can't believe that we keep talking about the freaking Knicks. The franchise that hasn't been relevant maybe ever. Legitimately, maybe ever. Just because they play in New York, they're irrelevant. But not because of basketball. But they still want Kevin Love. The Cavaliers, remember, shot down that trade in about a minute when they wanted to trade up Melo for Kevin Love straight up. But the Cavs are saying that they are indeed interested in Carmelo Anthony. I think he'd play really, really well there if he could get along and share the ball with his buddy LeBron, which I think that he can. The crux of this is that the Cavs don't want to get rid of Kevin Love, which I also get. So you know, you could envision them doing something funny like, you know, getting Shumpert back to New York. And, you know, the Cavs just don't have a lot of other attractive pieces. But I want to ask you a couple of things about this trade. Should that work, and they only deal with two teams, because there is still that aspect that they can get a third team involved, which is probably more likely than not. But if they were to get just a two-team straight-up trade, what kind of mix, and we're not even playing numbers, we're not going to get into the NBA trade machine, anything like that. But if you were to move Shumpert and friends, because he's the most attractive, you know, asset that they have to deal, Shumpert and friends back to New York, and you brought Carmelo in there, whose minutes is Carmelo taking to get it? He can't be a starter in that scenario if you've got Kyrie, Love, LeBron. You can't have Carmelo in that starting lineup. So is he going to be okay coming off the bench? And it's kind of a random question because it's likely to never happen. But, you know, I thought I'd throw it to you anyway on this very dull and dreary Thursday.
I think it is possible. Well, let's go back to really before I get to my solution on this or what I would do if I was the Cavs. Remember, go back and remember LeBron basically was, I don't want to say the word whining, but I think he was whining because, again, he's saying, you know, management doesn't spend enough on these guys when they're overpaying really mediocre guys. So it's like I say, remember LeBron was saying, you know, you got to give Tristan Thompson a contract. He's got to come back. We won the championship, yada, yada, yada. You know, spend money, Dan Gilbert. Mm-hmm. And then he spends the money, and then now he's saying, Dan Gilbert, spend more money. That's going to get back to my point. It was either this week or last week. Tristan Thompson calls out LeBron and saying, you know, we're basically here. We're, you know, doing our job. You know, let's just play. And then he sort of dissed LeBron where he's saying LeBron's not my age and I could talk, you know, however I want. When in reality, LeBron helped him get that contract.
Right.
So when you were talking about Shumpert and friends.
He's so empowered by that Khloe Kardashian.
Well, you're talking about Shumpert and friends. It could be Tristan Thompson and Iman – that's how you say his name, right? Iman Shumpert?
Iman.
Iman. Yeah, Iman Shumpert.
But just go with
it would
I
basically
Man.
Both of them.
It would basically Iman Shumpert.
It would just basically be both of them, right? Can Melo be in that starting lineup? Because Thompson starts, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's
starting at the center. I mean, you basically move everybody one up. You tell LeBron, you know, again, it's entirely possible if you trade Shumpert, you bring Melo in. Now you have a spot in that starting lineup. Melo has played the four. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, very appealing for Melo to be the four for defensive purposes.
No doubt.
That's why I think Dan Gilbert and Tyronn Lue have to get together and say, okay, we have to convince LeBron to play power forward. That's the best position he could be in at this point of his career.
No,
and
you again, that's all your advantage, though. You lose all of the LeBron advantage if you move him to four.
Are you kidding?
No, not at all. I mean, he's fast, but is he that much faster than if you have a good defensive scheme and your four is just waiting for LeBron in the paint? If you have LeBron, going against another big, he loses that advantage of being this massive small forward.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. Okay, you're bringing bring a specific team into this. San Antonio.
Why not? You're going to start there.
I hope you weren't going to start there because it's going to sound like I'm hating on the Spurs. And you know we get all these people that think that, you know, just because we're critical at some point. But okay, you're going to have let's say Pau Gasol and LaMarcus Aldridge are starting. You're going to have LaMarcus Aldridge up top against LeBron in a pick and roll? Are you kidding? That's pick and roll with LeBron and Carmelo. Pick and roll with LeBron and Kyrie. That the Spurs would get annihilated, especially if we're going to have Pau Gasol in the paint waiting. If they're going to have the Warriors, you're talking about Draymond Green guarding LeBron and Kevin Durant guarding Carmelo Anthony. I love the Cavs' chances on offense there. Defensively, you could actually put Melo on the worst offensive player from 1-4 on there and just, you know, pray that that guy doesn't make any shots and everybody else would be covered. I love the fact that if you get that would be the most versatile lineup that the Cavs could have, especially with Kevin Love at the five. You would have basically everybody having to play at some point at the 3-point line. That's going to be a nightmare if they have to have Zaza and Draymond Green up at the 3-point line.
So, but how are you going to convince LeBron to play power forward? Or do you think he needs any convincing?
I don't think he needs convincing.
I mean, if it's Carmelo Anthony coming in, he probably needs no convincing, right? If it's just some dude, he probably needs a lot of convincing.
Yeah, if it's basically a spot-up shooter, I think it would be. But if it's somebody where you can convince LeBron saying, hey, you're not always going to be the four. It's going to be matchup purposes where you and Melo are going to be switched. Absolutely. And at the same time, you could tell LeBron, listen, if they post you up, we could pressure. Let's talk about it in the defensive way. Defensively, if they were playing San Antonio, you could live with LaMarcus backing up Carmelo Anthony. I don't know if you want LeBron on Kawhi, but then you could put who would be the starting two at that point? Maybe Shumpert would be gone, right? J.R. Smith J.R. Smith or Kyle Korver.
Korver, I think, would be it.
Richard Jefferson. You could put them on Kawhi and then put LeBron on Danny Green because on the other end, Kawhi would probably be guarding one of the other two guys. Kawhi would have to be playing both sides of the floor without rest while LeBron's going to be resting at some point. I think this would be the perfect situation. If LeBron is – if he doesn't want to play the four, then he really doesn't want to win, in my opinion. You got to put yourself in the best situation.
Okay, so
I convince you?
Well, why do you hate the Spurs so much?
Because the Schwan's guy isn't coming till Tuesday.
Well, you know, yeah, you convinced me. More or less. I mean, it's one of these trades. I don't think it would ever happen. I don't think it could happen. I think it's going to cost way too much money. Gilbert's got to hold his ground in that scenario, I think. I don't know if it'll actually come to fruition, but it's an interesting thing to talk about. I mean, and when you're doing negotiations, you're not supposed to put all your cards out there, right? Isn't that what we've learned from Donald Trump? Yet in this case, the Knicks are letting it know that they want Kevin Love, only Kevin Love, and the Cavs are putting it all out there that, hey, they're interested in dealing members of their team, but not Love. And they want Melo, but they can't have Love for Melo. It just seems like they're sort of putting all that stuff out there. Maybe hoping that there's a third team that can come into the middle of it. Maybe it's the Clippers. I know that that's been rumored, and we even talked about that a little bit. But
I don't think so. You know what I think they might be doing? I mean, Kevin Love and Porzingis together, I don't think that would work. Even if you have either one at the five, I think it would be disastrous. I think they're offering maybe one guy. or maybe two guys, mediocre guys. If I think what they're trying to do is leverage themselves into saying, you know, okay, we'll give you, like I said, a Shumpert and Tristan Thompson,
like because Channing Tristan Fry Thompson, or something, you know.
I don't think even the Cavs want Channing Frye at this point. Channing Frye is way overrated. I think he's basically a taller. Let me put it this way: I would rather want Matt Bonner than Channing Frye, even at this point where one is retired. I just think that they're saying Kevin Love.
You'd rather have a guy who's not playing than a guy that's playing.
Yeah,
because and I shouldn't. Agree with you, of course.
Yeah, let's leave it at that. Just because that makes no sense. Next subject.
Boston, they've leapt ahead of Toronto in the East. Now they're only 2.5 back of the Cavs. They're 31-18 on the year. They're doing all of this behind ridiculously good play from Isaiah Thomas. What about your Boston Celtics?
Oh, they're not my Boston Celtics. They're Warren Shaw's friend of the show's Boston Celtics. I'm actually pleasantly surprised. You know, Isaiah Thomas should absolutely be in the MVP discussion. I would take him over Russ and Harden at this point because he's overcoming. I mean, he has more to overcome than Russell Westbrook at this point. Not only because of his team. I mean, he has sort of a better team in a sense because Russ is really having to take over, you know, everything. They're all pretty solid, the Thunder. But I mean, he's 5'7", 5'8"? Playing at that position,
yeah.
With ridiculous. Those stats, that's ridiculous. He should absolutely be in the MVP discussion.
And the stat, no MVPs. The stat that
You know what? Give three guys the MVPs. Break the trophy in three pieces MVPs. And give it. Exactly.
The stat that's most impressive to me, and why I agree with you that he should be in the MVP running. I don't think he's the winner. I think for me, it's been Harden before the season even started. He was going to be the MVP.
Where are you from again?
Austin, Texas.
What team did you recently? You like the Rockets, right?
Oh, of course. But it's beyond that. I mean, Harden's ridiculously good. But let's finish out this Isaiah Thomas thing. He's very short. I was going to say demonstrably short, but those are opposites of what I'm trying to get to. He's number one in the league in fourth quarter scoring. You know, last night they played Toronto. He scored 44 points overall. 19 of those in the fourth quarter. So he's closing out games. He's taking over games late. He's winning games on behalf of his team. He's bringing the rest of them up. I mean, that's sort of the stereotypical MVP. It's not the guy who's just scoring a bunch of points. The thing that differentiates him from Russell Westbrook, in my mind, is that, you know, Russ has better stats overall, for sure. I mean, number one in the league. In scoring, just doing great stuff over there. But his team is not better. He's not lifting them up. They're still losing. They're not, you know, they're just really not going anywhere. And then you look over there in Boston and you see Isaiah Thomas playing the same position, and not as athletic, certainly not as explosive, but he's scoring a ridiculous amount of points at the right time and bringing his team along. When I see things like that and kind of what Kawhi is doing here in San Antonio, I look at those guys and say, okay, they're the most valuable player. Of course, if you took Russell Westbrook off of Oklahoma, it'd be even worse of a dumpster fire than it is today. But you could say that about any of the other candidates. If you took Kawhi out of San Antonio, they're probably the best positioned to still be okay. And they would still be a playoff team because they have LaMarcus Aldridge on their team. If you look at Houston, if they lost James Harden, it's over. I mean, well, I say it's over. They just wouldn't have that number one score. They probably would be like a 9, 8, 9, or 10 at the end of the year. They'd be somewhere in there. Maybe they'd compete for that eighth spot without James Harden, maybe, because Patrick Beverley's a pretty capable player himself. But they just don't have that score. And if you look at Boston, though, Boston would be wrecked without Isaiah Thomas right now. So when I look at those, you know, at that type of a scenario, I think Isaiah Thomas is, I mean, he's right there in the MVP running.
Yeah. Yeah, to everything. We basically agreed
thanks.
On it.
Yeah. First time ever. Thanks for your support. Said, are you listening to the show?
What I said in 10 seconds, you took like 5 minutes to say, bro.
That's me. I'm
Isaiah Thomas. Absolutely.
I'm political.
Absolutely.
I'm political.
Love the guy.
Well,
I still think the Phoenix Suns are kicking themselves for trading them.
Oh, in Sacramento.
Never forget.
In Sacramento.
Hashtag never, yeah.
Spurs news. Joel Anthony today got signed for his second 10-day contract. So that's it. So you get two 10-day contracts, and then you either have to sign for the rest of the year or you have to be released. So what do you think? I mean, Joel Anthony is I mean, he's there for practice, right? He's not getting minutes. Box score says that. he's not playing. He's not really participating, but he's here for a second 10-day. We talked about this when Powell went out and they brought Joel Anthony in, that he would do a couple of 10-day contracts, but Powell is still going to be out whenever Joel Anthony is his second 10-day is up. So that being said, knowing that there's still going to be a gap, do you think that Joel Anthony stays with the team for the rest of the year, or they release him at the end of his 10-day and maybe go get somebody else for a 10-day contract to help bridge that gap until Powell gets back?
Oh, I think the first 10-day contract is kind of like, I'm interested in you. The second one's kind of like, I like you.
Yeah.
But then the third one, you know, that's the serious one. That's like putting a ring ring on the finger, right?
Because there is no third 10-day, right? I mean, it's you're on the team for the rest of the season. You have to have a contract at the end of your second one.
Just because of the minutes that he's not getting, I just can't see that. Why are you going to clog up that last spot with someone that can't even get minutes when the team needs a big man, you know? So I think it might be – I think this is the last that we might be seeing of him. I could be wrong. I would like them to go. Now that they have sort of the cushion of maybe bringing somebody from Austin in, I think the Joel Anthony signing was more of a, hey, just in case we really need a big man, but they haven't been in that position. So maybe bringing somebody like a Corey Jefferson, John Diaz probably, you know, popped for that. Mm-hmm. But I want to see one of those young guys too. I'd rather those young guys get, you know, maybe 1 or 2 minutes in a legitimate Spurs game, even if it's trash, garbage minutes, you know, just so they could get used to that feel. Maybe they get some confidence like DeJounte Murray, who, in my opinion, should be getting more minutes. Again, you know how we discussed the point guard position? Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that was lacking. I said it on Twitter. I don't think it was Jonathan Simmons missing time. I think DeJounte Murray needs to get minutes. I think the Spurs need to invest in – once Joel Anthony's second day, 10-day contract runs out, they need to invest in the young guys. Because this team, again, in those positions, like the point guard position and the big man position, they're really old. And everywhere else, they're kind of young. That's what balances the age out. So I think they need to invest in it. I think this is Anthony's last 10-day. Maybe he gets some minutes so Pop can showcase him and sort of, you know, put your name out there in case somebody else needs you. But I don't think the Spurs will.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they got Joel Anthony for the reason that you said. It's a capable big guy. He's not going to crap the bed. And he could be a good practice player, but he's not diverse. He's not exciting. He doesn't really contribute anything meaningful. He doesn't contribute anything during the games. I'm with you. I think that a guy like Jefferson coming out of Austin, just having the experience, even if he doesn't play, just be there, just be around those guys. We used to say just kind of be around Tim Duncan, and you'll just get better through osmosis. There is something to that. I mean, if you could bring Jefferson, whose style of play is more like Jonathan Simmons than any of the Spurs big guys. Way more athletic than LaMarcus Aldridge. I mean, he could run circles around Pau Gasol just because they have different styles of play. It could be really interesting to see if he could do something or be an interesting to build him up. And then, and, you know, I hate to say possibly trade him, but I mean, that's how you get assets to trade down the line. That's how you get players to put in those package deals, because you get them NBA minutes, GMs start noticing. And they become, you know, exciting assets to move down the road. So, you know, the Spurs don't have any of those options if they don't move one of the guys from Austin up. And this is sort of a no-risk scenario, because they're doing just fine without Powell. If they decided to give somebody like Jefferson a run and give him some minutes, I don't think he's not going to be so impactful in the game one way or another. He's not going to be a liability. He's not going to just screw things up, because his game is all about athleticism. In the big position, so in the two big positions actually, so he's not going to mess anything up. So you should give him a shot. So I think Joel Anthony, after this one, this 10-day, is on his way out of here, and on to other things, right? Maybe he can sign with another team that just needs some depth in one of the big positions. I mean, maybe somebody like Cleveland, if they start moving some of their bigs, as you mentioned in that last trade scenario, you know, they just need to shift everybody up, but they have to replenish that bench. So that's a guy who played with LeBron before, so maybe he's comfortable there.
Can you imagine that? LeBron whining this whole time, I need playmakers, and you know, they get Melo, but then Joel Anthony in fact.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you know, and the other thing, just to jump back to that, I mean, you said playmakers, but Carmelo Anthony is the opposite of a playmaker, right? I mean, he's a scorer, but he doesn't make any plays except for himself. Because you pass him the ball about chest high, and the next thing you know, he's thrown in the basket. There's no passing with Carmelo Anthony. There's no playmaking.
I think he can. I think I mean, we've seen him sort of make plays in the Olympic on the Olympic team. I mean, there you have superstars, and I think that's what he sort of needs.
That's intramurals, That's intramurals.
But you know, he's not the first option there. He wouldn't be the first option in Cleveland. I don't even think he'd be the second option in Cleveland. He would be the third or fourth option, depending on the situation.
Oh, at least. Yeah.
If Kevin Love stays, because he'd be stretching out the floor, I think it would be easier for him to be a playmaker in that situation. I'm trying to think of somebody, you know, LeBron, Ginobili. I mean, Ginobili makes plays. He makes plays happen. You know, if he could see a little bit of light in the ball can fit through there, he's going to pass it. He's going to make that play. Melo sort of needs the obvious play. You know, like if he's going to get double teamed, okay, this guy's going to be here. He can do this. I'll just pass it over there. And the pressure's not on him. I think it would be perfect for Cleveland. And again, his ego wouldn't be the problem there because, again, you have three guys who are veterans on that team who just tell him, you know, you need to get in line. And I think he sort of needs that at this point.
A couple of interesting things. I know we got to get off the Cleveland topic, but did you know Kevin Love's uncle is Mike Love, one of the Beach Boys?
Is that the guy with the beard? It's not the older one, right? The lead singer. I never really heard the Beach Boys.
So you don't care.
I used to enjoy them on Full House when they would come out in the episodes. But other than that, what was that song they had?
Full House. Oh my God. They had a lot of songs.
That song that they had, Down to Kokomo, that one?
He's the guy with the beard. He was the guy with the beard.
And Kevin, okay.
He looks just like Kevin Love. I thought that was very strange. The other thing that I was thinking about when you're talking about grouping those four together, the person who I think it pisses off is Kevin Love. He just signed that 5-year deal. He's getting paid like $114 million or something, 5-year deal. You bring him on. There's going to be some infighting for who's going to get that third, you know, that third priority, I think. And I think Kevin Love's the guy who gets pissed off in that scenario because you're talking about taking shots away from Kevin Love. Kyrie's going to get his. Of course, LeBron's going to get whatever he wants. You know, any shot he wants is his. Any possession is his. Kevin Love's the guy who's going to have to give up offensive touches to Carmelo.
I don't think that'll be a problem this season. I think, especially if they win, I think it'll be brought up in the offseason. And again, you know, with Kevin Love's contract, he's easily tradable now. And I think he would fit in, you know, if they wanted to trade him to the Clippers. Mm-hmm. I think that would fit. I mean, if LeBron really wants CP3,
Him to Golden State. Everybody else is going there. Just trade him to Golden State.
For Zaza, right?
Yeah, trade him for Zaza straight up.
You know, maybe if LeBron really wants Chris Paul there. You know, maybe a sign and trade. Chris Paul's going to be a free agent, right? Sign and trade. Send Kyrie over there. As much as I might get heat for that, but again, if LeBron wants his friend there, talent be damned, I think he might get him. I think it makes, you know, everybody else sort of expendable, especially Love. So I think it all works out at the end. Personally.
Well, switching off of those guys, and let's talk a little bit Spurs. They are playing the 76ers tonight at 7:30. Spurs are 37-11. 76ers are 18-30. Although I think they've won as many games already as they did all of last year. They're looking pretty good. I think that Joel Embiid is sitting out this game, but so is LaMarcus Aldridge for San Antonio. He's got a bit of a knee injury. He's just sitting out. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to see here. The Spurs are saying, but LaMarcus Aldridge is going to sit. My question for you is not who's going to win this game, but how by what margin is San Antonio going to beat Philadelphia tonight?
Is this the game that I said it was going to be a trap game? I think this was.
This is the one you said it was a trap game. Incorrectly said it was a trap game, yeah.
No, I think the Spurs might play down to their level. This is a game where if I'm Pop, again, I'm concerned about the situation because there's even been lots of Spurs fans on Twitter, on Facebook. I don't know how I know all these people, you know, personally, but they're all complaining, you know, so they're sort of saying, you know, the Spurs have struggled with Tony Parker back. He slowed down the game. Jonathan Simmons, you know, he came back. He really didn't help that much. This is a game where I would sit either I wouldn't play Ginobili or Parker, give DeJounte Murray those minutes to whoever he's sitting. And if that's really the root of the problem, where you need Murray and his quickness and how he speeds up the game, but he's also smart and aggressive. Then you have to make decisions. Because again, Tony Parker's only going to get older once the season, you know, keeps going on. Ginobili's going to be a little bit older also. Patty's not going to have that same influence, that he tries to do. I think Patty's trying too hard. I think he's trying to be a point guard. That last game, you saw horrible passes that I don't even think I would make against, you know, little fifth graders while I'm dominating him.
He's auditioning.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's actually driving his stock down, because they're saying, wait, this guy is just a shooter. He's a shooting point, right? He's really small, too. Yeah. I think, you know, if I were Pop, I would just, you know, sort of sit one of those two older guys down, give Murray those minutes. And then if the game changes, you know, I think there's decisions to be made. And I, you know, again, there's Spurs fans that'll say Tony Parker will never get traded, but at the same time, you got to realize it's a business, you know. So I think Pop has to make business and basketball decisions. But I think this is a trap game. I think the Spurs lose by like two or three.
Well, you know, they've only lost 11 games all year long, right? So I mean, the Spurs are again one of the dominant teams. It's no matter what incarnation of the Spurs over the past 20 years there's been, they're always, you know, a front runner and always seem to be a favorite. And they're again that this year. But they've lost 11 times. Six of those 11 losses have been to teams that don't have winning records. And that's what they find themselves in again tonight with Philadelphia. And one thing that you mentioned, and is also a quote from Danny Green, that's got me a little bit unsettled, not particularly about this game, because I don't think that they're gonna win by two or three. Or you said they're lose by two or three, right?
Yeah, I think it's a trap game.
I think San Antonio wins by, at minimum, 15 points.
So, oh, my Atlanta.
At a minimum, 15 points. Yeah, so after that Oklahoma City game, Danny Green said something about chemistry that kind of got me going, because for the Spurs, that's supposed to be – I mean, they've got talented players, but they don't have overly athletic players aside from Kawhi. You know, they do different things, but it's about the process. It's about the scheme, and it's about ball movement. It's about chemistry. Well, when you don't have chemistry, the Spurs, the significance of what they do starts deteriorating, right? So Danny Green said this, that, you know, when he's talking about losing to some of these teams, he's like, it's different things at different times. I can't put one particular thing. I put my finger on one particular thing in each game, but we're going to hopefully figure it out soon and start getting that chemistry back and get the ball rolling by the All-Star break. And my concern there is that, and maybe it's just word choice, right? And he just had to say something. Maybe we shouldn't read into this. But if it's in their head that they don't have chemistry, is that a significant problem for San Antonio?
Oh, absolutely. And I think he's just trying to say it in a non-dramatic way, because again, I mean, these are bloggers, reporters, etc.
Right.
You know, if he says it in the wrong way, that's the first thing they're going to run on. The one thing that I would ask Danny, if I was having a chai tea with him, with maybe some some pastries, I would ask him, you know, when did you have that chemistry? Because I mean, that makes a lot. That would be a question that would really open up what he's trying to say. Did they have this chemistry when Tony Parker was out and DeJounte Murray was starting? Because they were really doing really well offensively.
Why
with that starting
Tony
line.
Why do you hate Tony Parker, man? You hate the Spurs and you hate Tony Parker. That's what we've established
well,
on this podcast.
Exactly. And then I was going to bring up this point. Did you have chemistry when, you know, a Kyle Anderson was in playing when a Bertans was playing? I mean, you got to ask these questions. Or was it, you know, in the beginning of the season when all the starters were there? Because remember, let's not beat around the bush. The starters have not really had a groove, right?
We talked about it last pod. The bench has been saving them repeatedly.
Yeah, exactly. So when did they have this groove? Has Danny Green been playing better with Ginobili, you know, or with Jonathan Simmons, Patty Mills? Because Pops has been throwing out all these rotations. Again, excuse me. I really think that they enjoyed playing with Murray. Because he really sped up the game.
Right.
He was aggressive. Again, I think everybody sort of had that pressure on their shoulders sort of lifted because this kid was really aggressive. I really think it's that. And again, the Spurs are not a team that's built around drama. They don't like it. So these guys aren't going to come out and say, well, you know, this kid needs minutes. The other guys don't. I think there's something that needs to be done. I think Pop knows about it. again, we talked about this with Paul. But again, there's that respect factor with Tony Parker. If there wasn't a Patty Mills, I think it would be easier for Pop to say, you know, this sort of happened with Antonio Daniels.
Right.
Now you could be that leader.
Well, but it's not this quite the same thing, though. I mean, the Antonio Daniels is not as historically significant to this team as Tony Parker. I mean, you're talking about a finals MVP, a multi-time champion. And what were you really talking about with Antonio Daniels? Just some dude.
There goes our shot getting him on the pod, bro.
Well, I'm not trying to be offensive, but I mean, he would have to say that too. I mean, if you look at it from a realist, if he's a realist, is he as important to? I mean, when he, I still don't see his name up there, you know, next to Bruce Bowen's name
and Avery Johnson
and Avery Johnson's name. I don't see Antonio Daniels up there. You know, of course Tony Parker's is going to be up there. It's not the same thing. You can't just. You have to do it, you know, strategically. And I get you. If Patty wasn't there, then he would have. You could have gotten some more minutes for DeJounte Murray. And I tell you that we're going to kind of jump into a different segment of, you know, if the playoffs started today. But I'm kind of going through and looking at some of these matchups that we'll allude to. And I think you're exactly right. They've got to start getting DeJounte Murray some minutes now, because when I look at these matchups and who San Antonio would possibly have to roll through. I'm thinking about the point guards on these other teams, and Tony Parker is going to get absolutely torched on defense and
on both sides.
Yeah, and as you say, offensively. Yeah, exactly, offensively. So what if he has a game of his life against some of these point guards and he tosses in 15 points? I mean, it's going to be a problem. I mean, let's go through some of these matchups real quick, and we'll do the West and then the East. But if they started today, it'd be Golden State and Portland. Right, which I think would be just a absolute drubbing by Golden State. That's a four, in my opinion, that's a four game sweep. But then look at the two point guards in that matchup: Damian Lillard and of course Steph Curry, and whatever, you know, whoever would take whom on offensive defense, Klay Thompson or Steph Curry on Tony would probably take Klay Thompson. I think if at all, or if they maybe Pop would just be so shy from any of those matchups, and that's when you need a DeJounte Murray. You know what I mean? So either one of those point guards would kill him. Today, San Antonio would be playing Oklahoma City in that first round if the playoffs started today. And, it wouldn't just be Tony Parker getting beat off the ball defensively. He might die in the game. You know what I mean? It's like Russell Westbrook might stomp on his head.
You're making him – how old is he? Like 30 – he's like 36 right now. 34?
He's in his mid-30s for sure, but I mean Russell Westbrook is he's ridiculously athletic.
And then this is another thing that and this is another point because I think we get the point that you think he's just going to get destroyed, decimated. And if they play the Rockets, he's going to have to guard James Harden, right? Or Ariza or something, you know.
Right.
They're going to have to put him where he doesn't want to go. And again, this is the hard part about it, because again, we're discussing, you know, while Tony can't go to the third point guard, can't really put Patty at the third point guard. So I mean, then the fans come up with, well, trade Patty. That's what I've heard too. Just trade Patty and that makes it easier. But again, Patty's not earning that much to get something significant back. If you really wanted to do a trade to get Murray the starter minutes, it would have to be Tony Parker, because he's at, what, $15 million? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at that point, you either get cap space if you just give him away for nothing, or you get somebody else that could probably help you, during that playoff run.
And Patty's and then you really keep valuable. Mills. Yeah, Patty's really valuable.
Yeah, and then you get to keep Mills, maybe re-sign him for whatever Tony was getting. You know, who knows? I mean, you could do those things. But again, that's the hard part. You really can't bump Patty down to the third spot. But then you can't – if you're going to trade, it has to be Tony, logically, for a trade to make sense to get Murray those minutes. So the Spurs are in a very uncomfortable situation.
Well, what if you had Murray if they weren't to the two?
As what? As a backup two?
As a backup two, and just had him playing the one or the two, just depending on the situation, depending on the matchup. And then you potentially have him paired, which this would be a very, very small backcourt. But you could have him paired from time to time with – Tony or with Patty?
Well, you're talking about the backup two, right?
The backup. Well, I mean,
so where do you put Ginobili? What about Manu?
They're all start splitting. They all start sharing minutes. I mean, to slide somebody in, everybody else has to lose, right? They have to lose out minutes. So it's like Manu takes a couple fewer minutes, less a game, which wouldn't be a bad thing for him, just to save himself for the playoffs. Some Danny Green minutes. And you know, so everybody sort of slides out. But, I mean, Murray perhaps is playing the one and the two, and then you don't have to – it doesn't have to be a, you know, him or, you know, this or that type of scenario with the point guard spot. He can sort of spread out a bit. And that's kind of how the game's going anyway, right? I mean, where they're – even if Tony was in playing point guard offensively, there's no way that Popovich has him playing point guard defensively on these guys that we're listing out here.
And I mean, you brought up all these other situations, but then remember, he started against the Cavs. He did really well against the Cavs. We didn't see him all that much in the second half. Mm-hmm. So again, these are decisions by Pop where, you know, I think he's trying to find – I think he's trying to be more loyal than – coaching, you know, than coaching logically. I think that's what he mostly like relies on. I mean, we've seen him, you know, with his loyal factor, right? We saw him with sticking with Ginobili in the 2013 finals, where maybe T-Mac would have made a little bit more of a difference. We saw him with Duncan, you know, in last year, where, you know, you'd probably say, well, you know, Timmy shouldn't be in this situation, but again, it's Tim Duncan. The most famous example I saved for last, Nick Van Exel. You remember 2016 or 2006, I should say. Again, he was horrible, but again, Pop had that respect factor for him. So again, this is a hard situation, and I'm not putting down Pop because I know people are going to say, "All you're doing is because of this political stuff, you're putting him down." This is not an easy situation to be in. It's not an easy situation for all three of those guys, especially you know, if they weren't contending this year. The Spurs could easily say, you know, DeJounte's going to be our third point guard. We'll just bring him up next year, let Patty go, put Tony in the second spot. But again, if you could win this season, you have to do your best to do it. So this is not an easy situation for Pop. So I could see why he's possibly struggling going with the guys that he usually goes with. Paul mentioned that he leans on Patty more in the crunch time. But again, if Patty leaves during free agency, what's the point of doing that? So, you know, I think Popovich is torn. You know, if I had to guess, I think he wants to keep DeJounte Murray and Patty Mills because it brings two different dimensions that, again, makes him very versatile. But again, there's Tony Parker, who you remember those comments. He wants to play for 5 more years. Yeah. So what do you do? What do you do about that? You know, do you just tell him no? Do you, you know, when he's a free agent, do you just not pick up the phone, just say you changed your number or just hang up? I mean, these are not easy decisions. The Spurs are in a really tough decision, more tougher than we can imagine.
No, that's absolutely it. And you look at these other matchups, you go Houston would take on Memphis in that first round, which I think that'd be a pretty interesting series, kind of strength against strength there. And then the Clippers would take on Utah. And you know what? That's for me right now, with the way that the Clippers are playing and have the ability to sort of self-implode, I don't think that's exactly a slam dunk for the Clippers. Look over on the East, it becomes even less interesting right now. You got Cleveland, Charlotte, Boston, Chicago, Toronto, Indiana, Washington, Atlanta. The only one that does anything for me there is Toronto, Indiana in that first round matchup. Any of these exciting to you at this point?
No, not really.
Yeah,
we all know the state of the East, where Cleveland kind of knows that they're going to win it.
Right.
LeBron is just whining about making his team better so they could beat whatever team comes out of the West. That's the predicament the East is in, where the Cavs already know they're just going to bulldoze over everybody. They're just focusing on the finals right now.
Yeah. Well, let's run through a couple of stats and then close this thing out for Thursday afternoon. You know, you look at the highest percentage of points via the three-point shot. Who would you think is getting the most or the highest percentage of their offense off of three-pointers?
From who? From the whole league?
From the whole league.
Oh, my God. Really? It's going to be some name from three-pointers.
No, not the person, the team.
Oh, the team. I think it can't be the Warriors. Is it the Warriors?
It's not. They're not even in the top three. It's the Houston Rockets. They're getting 38% of their offense is coming three-point range. So that's just about 40%. Can you imagine 40% of your offense is coming from a three?
And that's D'Antoni's style.
Yeah.
But again, in the playoffs, if you're going to just be depending on those shots, it might be difficult for them, even in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculously high. But then you look at somebody who's had playoff success, like the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they're in second place at 35% of their offense is coming from three-point land. Tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for your support. And then you got Boston. So Boston at 33.5. But if you look at This is the little section here that I wrote out a couple of questions and wanted to ask you. If you know, we just talked about the highest percentage of points via the 3-point shot. Let's talk about the highest percentage of points via the mid-range shot. So if I look at that from 3-1, Detroit, the Pistons are getting 20% of their offense from the mid-range shot. Then in second place is the Knicks with 20.3% of their offense coming from mid-range. Leading the pack are the Spurs. Yeah, at 20.4% of their offense is coming from mid-range. So if I look at that, how can the Spurs be having so much success, and then the other teams that are having a high percentage of their offense coming from mid-range, those teams suck? Why is there such a disparity there? How can you have virtually the same amount of your offense coming from these different from that one sector, but one team is doing well? And is a very, you know, the second highest offensive rating in the league, and the other two teams are horrible. You usually don't see that because if you look at the 3-point shot, the three teams that I just mentioned are playoff teams and maybe in the finals: Houston, Cleveland, Boston.
Yeah, if we were talking about this stat 20 years ago, all the NBA coaches would be saying it would be an idiotic thing to focus on. Because again, I mean, when you were growing up, what would they tell you about the mid-range? Coaches would not want you to be shooting mid-range shots. It's either going, if it's going to be a long shot, you might as well shoot a three or be close to the rim. You know, long twos, that's basically, again, it's one of those shots everybody used to hate back then. But I think the Spurs, you know, they relish in that because they have big men who could put the ball on the floor and also post up and also make that shot. Mm-hmm. So it opens up the floor.
You're talking about
Powell
and LaMarcus.
Yeah, it gets the teams to second guess it, you know, and if you can make those shots, again, it's not the most favorable shot, you know, to be that close to the three and not just shoot a three. But I mean, if you're making it, again, it'll just make the defense, open up and, you know, easier layups, or, you know, it leaves that three open at the same time. And again, you've seen that with the Spurs. You'll have LaMarcus and Powell shoot those mid-range shots and then take a step back, shoot that three, make that three. Now the defense just doesn't know what to do. So I think it's to the Spurs' advantage just because of the versatility.
We'll talk about a stat that for the Spurs has meant a lot in previous years and should still mean something to them here. We're talking about secondary assists, right? So double touches. You're moving the ball twice on an assist. So this goes back to that 2014 beautiful game, all of that. Leading the NBA, it's the Golden State Warriors have 10.2 secondary assists per game. Boston's got 7.1, and then it's San Antonio at 6.6. So they're like 60% of the way to what Golden State is doing. To me, that's it's a little bit disheartening. The Spurs are still having great success, but Golden State's playing very Spurs-like basketball. And they're doing it in a championship level way, and they're getting a ton of assists out of it. They're moving the ball extremely well. Do you think that the Spurs being so familiar with that style that they're going to be in a better position to defend that, or is Golden State just unstoppable when it comes to moving the ball and getting an excellent shot?
You know, I don't think it's too much. Really, their ball. I don't think it's that they're really great passers. You can't say that Durant is a really great passer. Clay is an extremely great passer, sort of like the Spurs were back then, where they would dribble drive, you know, make that extra pass. I don't think it's that. I think it's really the attention they garner and the attention that's not paid attention to Zaza. You know, the attention they don't give. You know, one pass to Zaza, Zaza's going to find the open guy. So I think it's more of that. I think the Spurs can counter that, obviously. With their schemes, you know, they're going to pick out somebody to cover. Or, I mean, the bad thing is they'll probably, I mean, try to help out Tony Parker and pressure them, you know. So I think the Spurs are going to counter that just because of the pressure. There's not a lot of teams pressuring them right now. I don't know if that's by design. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're trying to say, okay, you know, we'll surprise Golden State because we know, you know, what's their Achilles heel on that. We don't want to show it in the beginning of the season, because if they come up with a game plan to counter that, especially with different teams that, you know, have different lineups, if they find one way to do it, I mean, then how can you beat them? So I don't really know, but I think the Spurs are going to find a way to counter that.
I was talking about net rating. Golden State's leading the way. San Antonio's right behind them. Golden State with 12.7. San Antonio with 8.9. And really, that shouldn't mean as much to anybody, really, except that these are both the solid teams in the NBA. We figured that they would be there. Offensively, Golden State's got a higher offensive rating, 113.8. San Antonio's at 110. Defensively, they're at 101. San Antonio's at 102. So, you know, straight through, despite all the secondary touches and assists, I wanted to highlight that stat to say these two teams are playing virtually identical basketball. Strong. I mean, they're the strongest in the league offensively. They're the strongest in the league defensively. So it's really going to be this, you know, like two Rams hitting or something. You know, it's going to be this, what is it, unstoppable force and immovable object kind of thing. So I'm really looking forward to seeing if we could get a showdown like that in the playoffs. And they don't play again against each other for another month or so, which is really disappointing that that the league spaced it out that way. First game of the year, and then they don't play again for, you know, it was like 4 months in between those two things. So,
and that might not be in the best benefit for the Spurs in that, because
see again there you go hating the Spurs again.
Because again they're gonna be a little bit worn out. You know, I would have been encouraged if they would have played against a fresher Tony Parker, maybe two games at the start of the season or so forth. But you're gonna get a banged up Tony Parker, and I mean, and again, it might work against the Spurs in that sense. But if that sort of triggers Pop into thinking, I can't play this guy against this team. And again, we saw that with Tim Duncan. Remember, Tim Duncan didn't start one of the games against the Warriors. Was it 2 years ago or last year?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that might happen. Yeah, it had a bit too whenever. But, I mean, he sat Duncan when they came up with that scheme to pressure. So maybe it's to the Spurs' advantage where, you know, maybe it forces Pop's hand to, you know, to adjust based on basketball and not on feeling. So anything can happen.
Well,
great thing about basketball.
I can also see it being the game that he sits everybody, right? And you see DeJounte Murray just because he's sitting everybody, right? We know he's prone to do that.
I mean, okay, let's say he does that, and Murray, I'm not going to say he shuts down Curry, but I mean, he does a better job than anybody else would do. He slices through that Warriors defense. They can't guard five guys, you know, so you know, they could play off Tony Parker, but can they play off DeJounte Murray, or, you know, play up on him and he drives? I mean, what's going to happen with that? I think something's got to give with that game. Something's going to, you know, stir the melting pot, as a great Michael Scott would say.
Well, little Office reference. Okay, anything else to add for the show?
Well, I was going through my Facebook stuff, and the Mavericks would trade Darren Williams to the Cavaliers. So
I mean, Shumpert.
I mean, that's what it is for the Cavs. I mean, they get their picks from Darren Williams, Mario Chalmers, Kirk Heinrich. I'm sure that's what LeBron expected, right?
Yeah, right. A bunch of
I think they're trolling him. I think that's what they're doing. You're like, oh, you want somebody? Yeah, pick out of all these three guys. So.
Hey, yeah. You brought this guy up a little earlier, but Van Exel, do we think he might go big three? Wouldn't that be awesome as a coach?
Oh, I thought you were when you said what about him, I was thinking, like, do you really think LeBron would want him on the team?
Yeah, would LeBron want Van Exel? How about Tim Hardaway? LeBron could get Tim Hardaway to play over there? No, I'm talking about the big three. Summer League.
You know who I'd want? I don't know about Nick, but I would really like Michael Finley. Michael Finley, did you see him as last year in the NBA? That guy was cut. So I would like to see if he can still give us a few dunks.
It's like looking into a mirror.
Actually, literally, because I would grow my soul patch out for Michael Finley when he did it with the Spurs. Okay. So he was a big influence on me. Just because I could
get your soul patch, learn how to play the bass.
You know, the true story, I was horrible at shooting. Okay, I could not make a shot.
I totally believe it.
I would shoot, you know, regularly. I would be like, have you ever seen the newbie shoot where they just like throw it up? They don't even follow up their shot.
Right.
It's sort of like a hot potato. That's how I used to shoot. I tried the sort of Mike Bibby shot with the two hands, or WNBA shot, you know, how they shoot. I sucked at that until one day when Finley signed, I was all like, let's see what this guy showed. And I would go through, I saw those mixes and all that. And now I'm a really good three-point shooter, better than I ever was. There was one game where I went like 12 for 15 or something like that. I literally wanted to retire. So from ever playing basketball because of that. So, I mean, he's a joy. We should get him on the show one day. I'm sure you can pay up whatever he demands. Make it happen, Ryan.
Speaking of that, Spurs are – they get 31.8 catch-and-shoot points per game. How about that?
Are you saying we should sign Michael Finley?
Stats, man. Yes, absolutely. No, that's good. That's like best in the league. Okay, well, that's it for this episode of the Spurs Cast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at the Spurs Cast. Catch up with Jose at JRG1023. Me, I'm at RyanMC_PS. Follow us or any of the Project Spurs folks at ProjectSpurs.com. Get your little eyeballs over to www.projectspurs.com. Great articles that are there. We had a guest from there last week, Paul Garcia. Lots of new writers, lots of new members of the staff over there doing great stuff. So go over to projectspurs.com today. Jose, thank you so much. And to you listeners, you're welcome. Enjoy the weekend.